And the thrill is back, folks. This is Rent a Wheel on Free Radio Santa Cruz with the Mideast Migraine Show for Monday. Let me see now, February 16, 2015. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 on your FM dial. Has been for a few years anyway. We're also streaming live at our online streaming service at freakradio.org. If you happen to be listening to the radio now or some old rerun of this program on the radio and you want to listen to us on the net, our online service, go to freakradio.org. That's www.freakradio.org, and follow click on listen and follow the instructions for picking up our live streaming service. You can also click on that lovely little hot red orange oval atop the transmission tower.
Do not move.
And the hits just keep on coming, don't they, folks? That was Ali Slimani by Lyra, and that was a remix. Cultural and musical influences from Algeria and the United Kingdom. This, of course, is from my lovely Putumayo Presents Arabic Beat album. Arabic Beat, the second in the series, founded by Arabic Groove. Them hits just keep on coming. Okay, folks, this is Rentwheel, and this is the weekday edition of Mideast Migraines, brought to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz. A couple of logistical things out of the way. You may find the archive of most of my programs that have been successfully recorded. Some of them very rarely do bomb out, like 2 days ago. I'm going to restart the book reading from the book Witness in Palestine by Anna Balzer. I'm just going to restart it next Saturday, following an announcement or two put out on the Santa Cruz Progressives email lists, places like that, because I failed to do that anyway, which I prefer to do when beginning a new book reading. Witness in Palestine, an American Jew in Palestine. Subtitle was something like that. We'll start again on Saturday, on the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraine Show, which comes at you every Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. But getting back to this archives thing, there are two archives for Mideast Migraines programs. This program at two separate other websites. One is the easiest access, I think, radioforall.net. That's radio, R-A-D-I-O, the number 4. Get that, folks. Radio, and then the digital character 4, A-L-L.net, radioforall.net. Pull up that site and just enter Mideast Migraines into the box, and you'll get a chronological listing of my shows. Roughly the most recent one at the top. Also, you can go to Santa Cruz Media Center, Indy Bay. Santa Cruz, as in the city that this radio service emanates from in the central coast of North America here in California. Indy Bay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, Santa Cruz, Indy Bay. You will also find my programs resting peacefully there. I mean, they're still alive, but they're there in peace and all that. You want to send a message to this program or to me, use the email address MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's MideastMadness@g as in gigantic, m as in minuscule, x as in somewhere in between there. X as in XYZ.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. You can send a message to my email, or this program's email. Other than that, you can give me a call at any time, even if I'm in the middle of a reading, if there's music going on, if I'm going to the potty, call me anyway. Just keep in mind, if I'm out on the can, that I will have missed the call because we don't have voice messaging here. Two phone lines for you. Both of them are area code 831. That's for Santa Cruz County in California. Area code 831. Line 1 is 427-3772. Again, 427-3772. 831-427-3772. And if that's all too busy with a long lineup, go to line number 2, 469-3119. Area code 831. Line 2 is 469-3119. Give us a call. Check in. Encourage me or discourage me, if that's your pleasure. I just need somebody to talk to. I'm so lonely here. The 17th Annual Homelessness Marathon. Robert Norris wants to pass Free Radio's very own Robert Norris wants to pass along to everyone that Free Radio the one in Santa Cruz here, will be streaming and broadcasting the marathon tomorrow starting at 4 p.m. Pacific time at freakradio.org and 101.3 FM. That is us. Details. 17th Annual Homelessness Marathon. The 17th Annual Homelessness Marathon is set to air. If you've never seen or heard it, it is literally like no other broadcast in the world, except for our daughter broadcast, the Canadian Homelessness Marathon. This is the world turned upside down and looked at from the perspective of the poorest of the poor, and featuring their voices as they speak for themselves. The broadcast will start tomorrow, Tuesday the 17th of February. Tomorrow, folks, at 7 p.m. Eastern. That's 4 p.m. our time here. And it will run for 14 hours until 9 a.m. Eastern, which would be 6 a.m. tomorrow, 6 a.m. Wednesday morning, Wednesday the 18th. So starting tomorrow, Tuesday, at 4 Pacific, ending at 6 in the morning on Wednesday. Hence, it is a marathon, folks. A list of stations where it can be heard, all or in part, may be found at a website called, there's a link here, homelessnessmarathon.org/2008/2009/where-to-listen. homelessnessmarathon.org. Of course, you can just listen here at Free Radio, Santa Cruz. Check local listings for exact hours of carriage. The entire broadcast will be televised. Televised, folks, on Free Speech Television's website at www.freespeech.org. And from 1 to 5 in the morning, Eastern Time, let me see, that'll be 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., Pacific, on the morning of Wednesday the 18th, the broadcast will also be televised on channel 9415 of the Dish Network and channel 348 on DirecTV. That's quite a media carry for something of this caliber, shall I say. Not being judgmental here, I'm just... Well, anyway, continuing. A schedule of the topics to be covered may be found at homelessnessmarathon.org. But bear in mind that this is a live broadcast that is always full of unscheduled twists and turns. This is not a charity event or a pity party. Homeless advocates have been warning for decades that the same economic factors causing homelessness would affect more affluent Americans, too. Now that just about everybody in America is struggling, maybe it's time to learn what the poor have known all along. That is a rather profound paragraph, if you ask me. Homelessness advocates warning for decades that the same economic factors causing homelessness would affect the rest of us. The great secret about homeless people isn't the percentage that are mentally ill or addicted. It's that almost all of them are American citizens. Almost all of them. The government should not be in the business of demonizing whole classes of people, herding them around like cattle and jailing them for the crime of being poor, just like in Dickens' time. I think they called those vagrancy prisons or something like that. Anyway, but nonetheless, we've created a society where there is no legal place to be free once you've lost your housing. For this broadcast, we'll focus on the criminalization of homelessness. And remember, the number one thing that homeless people say is, I never thought it could happen to me. If you don't want it happening to you, tune in. That message brought to you by Jeremy Weir Alderson, director of the Homelessness Marathon. The main thing is, folks, despite all that hot air, coming out of my lungs through my mouth that I've given airtime to, it will be carried here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 on the FM dial and streaming live at freakradio.org. Beginning tomorrow at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So the marathon is coming at you starting tomorrow. All right. This is the Mideast Migraine Show on FRSC for Monday, February the 16th. And you may call in at line 1, area code 831-427-3772. This has nothing to do with homelessness now. That was kind of a PSA I was passing along to you, a little promo for something we have on our station. Line 2 here is area 831-469-3119. Oh, I'm Ren Tawil, by the way, if I hadn't mentioned that yet. Now, this show does have featured behind the microphone here your friendly neighborhood local Palestinian American. There's at least one other in town here. We know each other well. And, oh, how did that happen? And, okay. Obviously, during this roughly two-hour program, and by the way, it's 3:17 in the afternoon, 3:17 p.m., so that jives with your personal time-space continuum. You know the show is live on this Monday, the 16th, so you may call in. We're going to talk about what happened in North Carolina. Good friend of mine who actually lives in the North African Arabic nation speaking, I should say, politically Arab country of Morocco in North Africa. They speak a number of languages there, but it is clearly a member of the Arab League, Morocco. A friend of mine who lives there forwarded this to me from Morocco World News. Terrorism strikes 3 Muslims in North Carolina. Double standards of Western media. Wednesday, 11 February. That, of course, would be last Wednesday. This was written by Abdelatif Zaki, again from Morocco World News. And a lovely color picture of 3 peace-loving Muslims, 1 male, 2 females, who were murdered by this awful-looking Western man with a scruffy facial hair. Ooh, he looks evil. All right, let's get to it. Rabat, the capital of Morocco. Caption for the picture: an American citizen shoots 3 young peaceful Muslim students. The media do not make an issue of it, referring to American media, of course. Neither do they specify his religion. He has apparently said he was atheist, but had he been Muslim, he would have been identified as an atheist of Muslim origin. Let's make sure we understand that. He has apparently said he was an atheist, but he has also said that had he been a Muslim, he would have identified as an atheist of Muslim origin. Very careful about what he says of himself. Here's the article. No public figures have yet come out to apologize to the world Muslim community, nor to demand that all atheists of a Christian origin prove their innocence and express explicitly that their religion rejects murder. Likewise, no one has yet demanded that whatever religion or lack thereof that he adheres to be reformed and its founding text be revisited and updated to adjust to the conditions of, quote, modernity. Terrorism is the same everywhere it strikes and has neither religion nor nation. The American tourist, check that, the American terrorist of North Carolina is no more motivated by religion than were the killers of the journalist in France. They were all motivated by hatred, originating in ignorance and nurtured in ideological deviance. That the French terrorists raised immediate world condemnation and expression of indignation and not the American terrorist tends to confirm what many have been at pains to explain, namely, that double standards prevail both in Western discourse and behavior, and as long as they do, terrorists of all walks and sides of life will have no difficulty recruiting to their, quote, cause, maintaining hatred and perpetuating violence. Craig Hicks, a citizen of the United States of America, an atheist of Christian origin, is a terrorist. He killed three innocent and peaceful young Muslim students, Dia Shadi Barakat, 23, his wife, Yusor Mohammed Abu Salha, 21, and her sister, Razan Mohammed Abu Salha, 19, on the University of North Carolina, UNC campus in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, USA. The victim's only crime was apparently being Muslim. Of course, it will be argued that the crime is not motivated by hatred. Of course, major papers will have headlines about the crime, but nothing like we saw after the Paris tragedy. Terrorism, like all other types of crime, is not the monopoly of any nation, nor does it originate in any religion. Muslims are already expressing their frustration, their pain, and their anger. Let us hope they will know how to control their passion and not to react in manners worse than the crime itself. The cycle of violence has to be broken. This is no game. Regardless of how religious teachings have been interpreted over time and what those following them have done, supposedly in their name, people have to find ways of accepting one another and of living peacefully together. Regardless of who colonized whom at certain points in time, who persecuted whom, and who made whom suffer. People have to learn to live for the future and not for the past, for the living and not for the dead, to be happy together and not to live to die in horror. But this is a dream for the time being, and nothing indicates that it is about to come true. Wars and atrocities are still ahead of us all. Unless last-minute wisdom saves the world, wrath will be unleashed sooner than it can be managed. Again, this article from the 11 February edition of Morocco World News by Abdel Atif Zaki. Views expressed in this article are the author's own and do not necessarily reflect Morocco World News editorial policy. My bud out there in Tarandot, Morocco, who sometimes goes by the name Daoud, forwarded this to me with a personal note that this is an extremely well-written article, and I must admit that it is, particularly given the opening paragraph, no public figures have yet come out to apologize to the world Muslim community, etc., etc., clearly makes this a commentary, though I think that it wasn't made clear right away that this is commentary, but given the way that it was presented, the distinction should be made. Here are some comments by online readers. Steve Bowman. This is an appalling act by a hateful atheist. I'm not sure why he is referred to as, quote, an atheist of Christian origin. This act was not done in the name of God. It's a racist hate crime. I've never seen the term used, atheist of Muslim origin, so your point is moot. Why overshadow the horrible deaths of these beautiful young people with empty religious comments like this? Well, at least it was a commentary. I added that. And Steve Bowman adds a second item here. By the way, in response to your first paragraph, Mr. Zaki, if he had been Muslim, they would have said Muslim. If he had been Christian, they would have said Christian. But he was an atheist, so they said he was an atheist. They reported correctly and called him what he professed to be, an atheist. This is pretty simple. You are the one who is creating an identity for him that doesn't exist. Atheist of Christian origin, quote unquote. So who has the double standard? I think he's getting worked up over basically nothing. Item from Muhammad Ali, a top commenter on Morocco World News. I don't know that this would be the recognized in Western parlance, the Muhammad Ali, but says, say in the name of atheism, terrorizing people who have faith in Allah, God, Ilahi. As he's saying, say in the name of atheism, terrorizing people who have faith in Allah, etc. I don't understand. Linda, I'll just give her first name here. The University of California, Davis. The husband was studying to be a dentist. He and his wife had collected and distributed dental supplies for 75 homeless people in Durham, North Carolina, organized an online fundraiser to provide dental care to Syrian refugees, which had so far raised over $25,000. And he was due to fly to Turkey this summer to give voluntary dental care to refugees. By all indications, these were idealistic young people with real consciences who cared for and wanted to help not just fellow Muslims, but fellow human beings. A sickening, angering, pointless loss for us all. That comment from Linda out in UC Davis. That would be University of California, Davis, California. Mohammed Rosan, California State University, Sacramento. My heart in pain from this ruthless attack and killing three bright students. People in government and those people in Congress think they are Christians, kept silent, should be ashamed of themselves. We all are God's children. Let's see. Najat. Another top commenter with a Morocco World News. I don't care what the media says. This is a hate crime. The son of a bitch killed them because they were Muslims. I think he should get the death penalty. And that's pretty much all that I copied in terms of online comments to this online article from Morocco World News, MWN. Does anyone want to comment on this or talk at me about this? Area code 831-427-3772 or line 2, 469-3119. The lines are open. The lights are clear. The ringers are on. Give us a call here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is the Mideast Migraine Show, the February 16, 2015 edition. It's just about 3:30 p.m. I'm going to read that. I'll read the last paragraph of this, in actuality, news commentary one more time because it's striking how right on it is. Regardless of how religious teachings have been interpreted over time and what those following them have done, supposedly in their name, people have to find ways of accepting one another and of living peacefully together. Regardless of who colonized whom, at certain points in time, this strikes home for me especially as a Palestinian-American, and yes, I have been to the old country. Regardless of who colonized whom, at certain points in time, who persecuted whom, and who made whom suffer, people have to learn to live for the future and not for the past. For the living and not for the dead, and to be happy together and not to live to die in horror. Not to live to die in horror. This is but a dream for the time being, and nothing indicates that it is about to come true. Wars and atrocities are still ahead of us all. Unless last-minute wisdom saves the world, wrath will be unleashed sooner than it can be managed. Excellent commentary by this Abdelatif Zaki. Okay, let's see what else we have going here. 3:30 p.m., 3:31 p.m. on the Pacific Coast. Our old bud, Miko Peled. Former Israeli Jew, currently, of course, a Jewish person, who now resides in far southern California, former resident of Zionist Israel, has sent out his weekly digest for Feb 16. My piece as published in The Hill Congress blog. Wow. Miko Peled managed to get published in The Hill, which is a famous periodical associated with Capitol Hill in D.C. Netanyahu is coming to town. Remember now, this is a Jewish American, former resident of Israel, speaking here. Congress blog, The Hill's Forum for Lawmakers and Policy Professionals. Dated February 5, Netanyahu's Coming to Town by Miko Peled. Come on. Netanyahu is coming to town. He'll speak at a joint session of Congress and at the AIPAC National Convention. AIPAC, of course, being the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Congress and the AIPAC National Convention. We'll hear about the threat of Islam, terrorism, Iran. How delightful. But what about Gaza? Hey, pop-up, go away. As 2015 begins, 1.6 million people in Gaza are still living the consequence of Netanyahu's killing spree of summer 2014. Over 2,000 killed. More dying daily due to lack of shelter, heating, and medical care. Remember, folks, they're above the equator. It's winter over there, too. The countless injured are denied care in Israel, although Israeli modern medical facilities are available a few short miles from Gaza. So one would expect the discussion of a solution to Palestine-Israel would gain momentum. But first, we have to bring up a few sticky issues. Why not use the $3 billion U.S. dollars in foreign aid Israel receives annually to rebuild the destruction Israel created in Gaza. Millions, millions of tons of U.S.-made bombs dropped by IDF on Gaza is no small liability. We should touch on the fact that had it not been for Israeli forces pushing Palestinians out of their homes in 1948 to 49, there would be no Gaza, quote, strip, and no refugee problem. No small liability here either. My father was the late IDF, Israeli Defense Forces General, Monty Peled. He was, among many things, military governor of Gaza. In the years leading to and during the 1967 war, he was a member of the IDF High Command. In preparation for my book, The General's Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, 2012, Just World Books, I, Miko, spent many days in the Israeli Army archives. What I saw confirms that the myth of an existential threat on Israel by Arab armies is precisely that, a myth. Records show clearly that as early as the mid-1950s, Israel was ready to take the West Bank and Gaza and complete the conquest of Greater Israel. The Gaza Strip was constantly under attack as soon as it was created and overpopulated with thousands of traumatized homeless refugees. The taking of the West Bank was an Israeli strategic objective from the very beginning, and in 1967, the political climate allowed the IDF to take it. Exactly like in 1948, as soon as the gun barrels fell silent, Israeli bulldozers began destroying Palestinian towns and neighborhoods in the West Bank and East Jerusalem in order to erect towns for Jews only. Israeli commanders referred to the 1967 conquest of the West Bank as, quote, finishing the job. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that the so-called two-state solution was never a serious option. As one staffer at Capitol Hill said to me, Israel does not even offer equal rights to Palestinians who are citizens of Israel. End quote. So how can we expect that Israel, a state that offers exclusive rights to Jewish people and whose boundaries include all of Greater Israel, also known as Palestine, allow for the creation of an independent state for Palestinians? My point exactly. Remember, folks, this is an article appearing on The Hill, The Hill's web offering. The author is Miko Peled, a American Jew, formerly Israeli Jew. He continues here, the choices in Palestine go beyond Fatah or Hamas, and the choices for a solution are not one state or two states. Now, almost 50 years and billions of dollars after 1967, the integration of the West Bank with the rest of Israel is complete, and the expectation that Israel would seriously negotiate to reverse is beyond absurd. The choices now are whether to continue the same old Fatah versus Hamas, Abbas versus Netanyahu paradigm, or push for freedom, justice, and ultimately peace and security for Palestinians and Israelis alike. The new paradigm is transforming all of Israel-Palestine into a single democracy with complete equal rights. I'll say it again. This is Miko Peled's words. The new paradigm is transforming all of Israel/Palestine into a single democracy with complete equal rights. A one-person, one-vote system will allow Israelis and Palestinians, two highly productive, educated societies, to reach their true potential in the beautiful country they share. Peled is an Israeli writer and activist living in San Diego, California. He is the author of The General Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, 2012. He writes and speaks extensively on the issue of Palestine-Israel. Now, for those of you who are listening, regardless of what your position, stance, attitude is towards this subject, towards the arguments, towards Mr. Peled himself, it's clear that he would be considered by Israel-hugging, anti-Semite-hating Zionists, really all of them, whether they know it or not, they're Zionists. Their attitude about Miko Peled here is that he is a self-hating Jew, is that he is, in effect, an anti-Semite, Jewish or not, because he's critical of Israel. And so he'd be considered probably a madman by many of these same people. I will tell you, regardless of how obviously eloquent and articulate he is on the matter, and how controversial his ideas may be, I would say he is an angry man, because I have seen a video which I played for my listeners of this program, Mideast Migraines. And not only can you hear the anger and the disgust in his voice at the current situation and how it's destined to go nowhere, if the status quo remains in play, you can hear it in his voice. I could see it in his face as I was watching the video. He's a man with a mission, but an angry man at that. I, too, am an angry man. Perhaps you can say I'm inspired by Peled's demeanor. But in spite of the negativism that others may hear in his voice and see in his face, he can still be called downright refreshing in his observations, his take on the situation over here, over there, and his prognosis of how to deal with this. That again was Miko Pellett's article in the Congress blog from the Hill, February 5. If you want to make comments yourself on this, call me at area code 831-427-3772 or 469-3119. Take a quick look at what's going on here. To whom it may concern, the Shoutcast program doesn't seem to be picking up anybody. When I was listening to free radio before I left the house early this afternoon, there was a lot of buffering problems. I think that probably has something to do with it. Buffering program problems. Tisk, tisk. Here are some online comments to this. By Connor Cusack. Miko Pellett is a great journalist and humanitarian. I am midway through his book, The General's Son. U.S. politicians would do well to listen to someone who knows how it is to be a proud IDF fighter, who wakes up to the tragedy of his own country's oppression of the Palestinians. If I had enough money to send a copy of this book to every U.S. politician, then I would. Beverly Krell says, Netanyahu will be coming to town to pontificate on the evil that is Iran and to play to the home audience as Likud is moving ahead in the polls. Bibi is the greatest disaster that could have befallen Israel, after Sharon, that is. Within the space of six years, he has attacked Gaza three times, causing a huge loss of life, destroyed the infrastructure, and if elected, he will complete the job. This monster isn't interested in peace, only in a greater Goliath. He is leading Israel into isolation, and if left unchecked, poses a major threat to global peace. A couple of comments I have. Of course, when Beverly here refers to this monster's interest in a greater Goliath, she is probably borrowing from Max Blumenthal's book titled Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel, which I have read on this program. Began reading it some 15 months ago. And you may go to my archives at radioforall.net, radioforall.net, and pick up those chapters one by one. Hear them at your own convenience, or buy the book. Max Blumenthal, Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. Remember, folks, this is a free publication out of Washington, D.C. I do not have a feel for the degree or amount of influence that congressmen may have on its contents, but these arguments are quite striking. Here, Andrew says, Israel, what I believe is happening, and the ever-growing fascism that has engulfed the country, is that he writes really funny here. This is confusing. I'll just read it as is. Israel, what I believe is happening, and the ever-growing fascism that has engulfed the country, is that they, Netanyahu Bennett, and the likes of Moshe Feilin, I believe Netanyahu Bennett refers to Bibi's father, and the likes of Moshe Feilin and other ones before them cannot believe how the Palestinian people have not given up or given in to such brutal and unjust savagery and oppression. Bibi and company are getting more reckless and vicious in their attempts to break the spirit of every person in Palestine, man, woman, and child. The world is awake and will stop this. People like Miko and David Sheen, a close friend and colleague of Max Blumenthal's, have the support and drive behind them for the common cause of humanity, and we will see the people of Palestine get that. The other thing I wanted to say about the previous Beverly's comment here is that she notes within the space of 6 years, he has attacked Gaza 3 times, causing huge loss of life, destroying the infrastructure, and if elected, he'll complete the job. The first 2 attacks, beginning in December of 2008 and November of 2012, those were both clearly politically motivated attacks, happening only weeks before Israel's national election. In both cases, Netanyahu was the prime minister both times then and during the third attack in just this last summer. And clearly he just wanted to be reelected. So for him it was like, let's go kill a bunch of Arabs and prove that we're mightier than them and we want to secure the Israeli people. Connor Cusack comes back again and says Democrats should pass on meeting Netanyahu after the shoddy way this was done. If Israel, referring, I believe, to the John Boehner's invitation to the PM bypassing Mr. Obama, Connor says, if Israelis really do feel, quote, more secure with Netanyahu as leader, then I fear they are misled and misguided by their politicians and their media. Netanyahu and Likud's push for increased settlement building makes it look like land is more important than peace. Israel will only be secure when there are equal rights for all and one secular state solution. I'll say it again, Israel will only be secure when there are equal rights for all and one secular state solution, or in the United Nations preferred 2 states on 67 lines. Anything else? And many will continue to emphasize with the Palestinians' physical... many will continue to empathize with the Palestinians' physical fight for self-determination. In other words, people around the world will turn their determination and their support once again for an armed struggle. P.I. Max says, regarding Democrats should pass on meeting Bibi, as I intimated in another post, don't you think they, the D's, will go to the AIPAC meeting where they will convene behind closed doors without the presence of the press? Good point, P.I. Andrew chimes back in. Netanyahu is coming to town as he now. How much longer is the U.S. taxpayer going to foot the bill to pay continued apartheid and illegal settlements and occupations that are crippling and continually collectively punishing the people of the... And then it stops right there. I don't think I'm going to read anything more by Andrew simply because his posts are unreadable. Jabin, J-A-B... No, J-A-N-B-N, responds to Andrew Neese. In his last election campaign, Netanyahu's speech to Congress is featured in his video campaigns. The U.S. Congress was nothing more than a prop for Netanyahu, who will likely use the Congress as a prop again. Here is a link to his disgusting political commercial. Every member of Congress should bow their heads in shame for being used as Netanyahu used them. And then he gives a YouTube link here. Okay. Jobin on a separate post on its website, AIPAC, boasts that at least two-thirds of the members of Congress will attend its March conference. Two-thirds of a Congress that is bought and paid for by the Israel lobby. The lobby, capital L, will be taking notes on which members of Congress attend Netanyahu's lying, fear-mongering speech and who jumps up and applauds and how many times they do that. They will also keep close tabs on those members of Congress who have in this instance declared their freedom from AIPAC and Netanyahu. Those members can surely expect largesse from members of the Israel lobby to flow into the campaigns of their opponents. He means the former people he was talking about. To the lobby, there is only one issue in America. That issue is Israel, and nothing else matters to them. The poor, medical care, the environment, the crumbling infrastructure, education, the climate, none of that matters. It is only Israel that matters. When will AIPAC and the rest of the lobby be forced to register as agents of a foreign power? It can't happen soon enough. Davy Wavy. I guess I'm assuming this is a fake name here. The real question is, will the Congress break the elusive 30 standing ovations mark? The last time B.B. the Butcher was before our elected reps, he received 29 standing ovations, just shy of the 30 mark. Can he bust his own record? Does he have the charisma to pull it off? After all, he is largely responsible for last summer's killing of some 531 children in Gaza. This gives him legs before the Congress, and the circular military funding of Israel, together with the contractual kickbacks ultimately to the Congress, well, this helps campaigns as well. Reps have no respect for, quote, democracy. In other words, they only respect their coffer-filling lobbyists, people who lobby them. Davy Wavy continues, what's not to like after all? I'm betting he can do it, but maybe we need a betting pool for this. Take bets on each number over 20, giving odds. Helen here writes, I read that Nico Pele's mother refused to live in the home offered to her by Israel for her family. Let me read that again. I read that Nico Pele's mother refused to live in the home offered to her by Israel for her family. She knew that a Palestinian family were turfed out of their family home to make space for her. This, of course, is standard practice. Okay. Let me read... I'll read this. Oh my God, it's long. Okay, I'm going to give some equal time to Justin here, to Justin, who writes on this on the board of internet readers. What a moronic, hysterical load of garbage. Individual Israelis may have advocated for expansion into the West Bank, quote, as early as the mid-1950s, end quote, because the 1948 armistice lines were just that, the arbitrary front lines where the Jordanian army had decided to dig in for maximum military advantage and from where Arab militants had been launching assaults to murder Israeli civilians from the day the ceasefire was declared in March 1949. Yeah, like as though Israel hadn't already pushed those lines as far back as they could push them. So, of course, the Jordanian army is going to dig in for maximum military advantage. Justin goes on, where do the anti-Zionists get this idea that there was ever a, quote, state of Palestine that Israel has, quote, stolen? It never existed. It was never a secret that Zionists were disappointed with the 1947 UN partition plan. Of the original British mandate of Palestine, the Jews hoped that they might be offered about half, but in the end they were only offered half of half. First half was given, oh boy, here we go again. First half was given to form the Arab state of the Hashemite kingdom of Transjordan, and then half of what remained was to be given to another Arab-Palestinian state. 75% of the mandate was to go to the Arabs, and yet the Zionists agreed to those terms for the sake of peace. It was the Arabs who attacked and who continued to maintain hostilities against Israel even after the war. Okay, I'm getting sick to my stomach. I'm not going to bother reading the other two paragraphs. Let me comment on this Justin's tirade here against Mr. Peled, against former Israeli Jew Mr. Peled. The arbitrary front lines where Jordanian army had already commented on that. Yes, Arab militants had continued to launch assaults to murder Israeli civilians. Of course, the Arabs wouldn't say that they were murdering them. They were saying that this is a form of armed struggle. How often do Zionists and Israelis even bother to dare whisper the term armed struggle instead of terrorism or instead of murder? Where do the anti-Zionists get this idea that there was ever a state of Palestine that Israel has stolen? Folks, it doesn't matter what they called it or whether they referred to it as Palestine. The Palestinian people are real people, and their land was stolen. Those Palestinian Arabs had been expelled either by force, through stark fear, or through extreme intimidation and manipulation to turn themselves into refugees. Many of the refugees had witnessed their own members of their own family and their own communities, towns, villages, murdered by machine gun wielding Zionist partisans. That's why they became refugees. Now, it's important to understand this next piece here. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because it's difficult to do without a map in front of your eyes here. It was never a secret that Zionists were disappointed with the UN, with the 1947 UN partition plan. Of the original British mandate of Palestine, the Jews hoped that they might be offered about half, but in the end they were only offered half of half. Folks, this Justin here is going back to a time when, after 400 years of domination by Ottoman Turks, Turkish, mostly Muslims, who were imperialistically dominating that part of the Arab world, the Turks, who sided with Germany in World War I, lost that war to Great Britain, France, and the United States, primarily, and so you have new British and French European imperialists who took the place of the Ottoman Turks. And the Justin here is talking about Zionists who were upset at not getting as much land for their new Zionist Israeli imperialist ambitions. First Ottomans, then Britain and France, and then ultimately Israeli Jews. Justin is referring to the British Mandate of Palestine, which at one time included present-day Israel and Palestine, and the current Kingdom of Jordan, or as he refers to it accurately here, the Hashemite Kingdom of Transjordan, or the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. I think the word trans has pretty much been dropped now from the designation of that country. He claims that all of that, including present Jordan, was the whole of the Palestine, quote-unquote Palestine, as Justin would quote and unquote it, the half of which is supposed to go to the Zionists. And because the land east of the Jordan River was hacked off through some negotiations or manipulations or whatever and given to the Hashemite king, that royal family, leaving what was west of the Jordan River to be designated Palestine, half of which, slightly less than half of that, which was to go to an Arab state area and the rest of it to a Jewish state area, some 56% of Palestine, west of the Jordan River Palestine, 56, slightly over half, was to be Jewish state area, and that included, by the way, most of the truly arable land, the rest of it being largely minimally farmable or unfarmable desert, went to the Arabs. And so his way of looking at this is that half of the of West Jordan Palestine is only a quarter of the Palestine that the Zionists were banking on. I'm not even sure that that's true, because I do understand at the post World War I peace conference in Paris in 1919, the year after the war ended, Zionists were represented, or they represented themselves at the peace conference, and they made their demands there of all of west of Jordan, Palestine, plus some land east of the river, plus essentially the Golan Heights, southern Lebanon, and a good chunk of Egypt-Sinai Peninsula. That was their demand in 1919. All of it. Not saying anything about a Jewish state area. Forget this business about whether or not there was a historical state of Palestine, because that is a non-argument. That is a deception, a deflection from reality. Again, like I said 5 minutes ago, it's really hard to talk about this if we don't have a map right in front of us, but for you ardent listeners who are using your noggins and breaking out the old atlas or the globe and trying to follow along, you might have a better idea of what I'm talking about. There are many historical maps of that region of the Middle East, including in this Anna Balzer book that I'm reading now on Saturdays, Witness in Palestine. Fantastic, beautiful, full-color maps in that. But they're available. And this Justin dude is upset because the Zionist imperialistic endeavor was restricted to less land, to taking less land from the native Arabs, whatever you call they may call themselves, than what they wanted to begin with. Justin is upset because he couldn't cause a flow of refugees greater than what happened in 1948, which was 750,000 Arabs kicked out or running in fear for their lives and safety and who were never able to return. He wanted an even bigger refugee problem that would be out of the hands of the Israelis once they had left the country. That's called Zionism. That's what Zionism is all about, to take land for Jews and for Jews only, and to keep them separate from non-Jewish peoples, whether those non-Jews were Arabs, whites, Asians, or whatever. Okay, that's... Justin, you suck. You have this bad information and a very decrepit, strikingly slanted view of what was going on in 48 and 49 and all that stuff. Okay, folks, it's 3 minutes after 4 in the afternoon. You are listening to the Mideast Migraine Show this Monday, February 16, 2015, on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 on the FM dial, and streaming live at freakradio.org. Let's put this aside. I want to continue to talk about lobbying in Washington and the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee and stuff like that. And in order to prepare for doing that, we're going to have a musical break. This is Ren Tawil on Mideast Migraines.
كانوا غير هذوك اللي بقاو لي والان حبيت نحبط في سونتر فيل ونسي كاش ما يحبس لي كاش تاكسي نربط في صبادي وما عنديش تقاشر بحروا لي كي تحت في الغرقة كانوا غير هذوك اللي بقاو لي ودركات غير الفرق في جيبي والان حبيت احبط في صدر ميل ونسيك اش ما يحبس لي كاش تاكسي يا خو اسمح لي ولا غير كومبلي ودركات غير الفرق في جيبي مع الخرا معايا كل نمشي ابي كيما العاده في العاصمه رجلي لي بابي ما عطاوليش لو فيزا مون اغني في البلاد بصح كل يوم غير الفرق في جيبي وجعت كرشي وراني جيعان كل شي غالي في هاد البلاد سي دوماج هاد لا بروباغوند مي سي فري غير الفرق في جيبي بابا دا 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 We'll be right back.
And again, folks, you are listening to some delightful Middle Eastern and Middle East-inspired music from the record album, the compact disc, Putumayo Presents Arabic Beat, and which is, let's see, from 2012. That last piece, track number 4, was Jalal Alhamdoui by Sidi Habibi, Moroccan and Belgian influences. The previous piece was Noor by Narbat, influences from Spain, Algeria, France, and Morocco. Okay, Katie Miranda time. A few months ago, Katie began to grace us with her personally launched Palestine Telesummit Solidarity series of filmed and recorded, sound recorded interviews with people, including Miko Peled, which, as I said earlier in this show, I had played for you, like last year, late last year. The following is, let me see here, make this so everyone can read everything. And Katie Miranda presents an interview with Richard Forer, F-O-R-E-R. She says, I love transformation stories like Richard's. He was a former member of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee who had a spiritual awakening which led him to become a staunch supporter of Palestinian rights. He talks about how the roots of his irrational fears of the Arab world were based on indoctrination that all Arabs want to kill Jews. Knowledge is power, and this is a must listen interview for anyone wanting to understand the Zionist mindset. Their beliefs surrounding the innocence of Israel are so hard to break because they form core parts of their identity. Here is the interview with Richard Forer.
Or that we have just taken for granted as being true because someone told us and it turns out not to be true. The other element, besides taking responsibility for our beliefs, is recognizing that no one people, no one person is superior to anyone.
Okay, I'm not sure what this is that you're hearing now. I can't locate its source, but it might be the part of the Richard Forer interview. We're starting at the beginning of Richard Forer's interview.
Not that we have to like the other side, but recognize and acknowledge that we're all entitled to this same self-determination. There can be no peace.
Argues that the true root of conflict is one's produced identity and the beliefs and images that emanate and reinforce
that identity. With me, Susan Medaris. This week I am joined by Richard Forer from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's joining me to talk about his book, Breakthrough. We also have a lot to discuss regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. So do join us.
Critical
after more than 60 years, the Israeli-Palestinian issue is as intractable as ever.
The reason it's so difficult for Jewish Americans in our society is because of the fear of the Holocaust, cause of conflict. Instilled in
throughout
our minds
life,
from childhood,
Forer
at least in my mind and the Jews of my generation, was the fear that the Arabs represented another threat to the Jewish people after Adolf Hitler killed them.
All right, my friends. Another technical disaster, and I don't even know why this is happening. We are getting crosstalk either from another source, or it could be that the video interview that I want you to listen to is screwed up. I am so sorry. Didn't even occur to me that this might be a problem, so I did not listen to it earlier. Offhand, I would say this is a YouTube problem. Okay. Well, you know what? I was thinking of foregoing this interview anyway because of some real generalized transmission problems that we seem to be having here today at Free Radio Santa Cruz. So I just assume put it off until next time anyway, next Monday. It's embarrassing, and it's also maddening that this is happening. We're getting some
beliefs and images that we take for granted. But because these beliefs and images are part of our identity, the fear of another Holocaust.
Yeah, I think this is a YouTube-based or a Katie Miranda PTS, meaning Palestine Telesummit Solidarity Program problem. Okay, well, it's 4:16 p.m. I'll just have to work my way around this for next Monday. I feel terrible that you can't listen to it today, but let's get back to the proper folder here, and as little as I want to admit it at the moment, this is the Mideast Migraine Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Okay, let's talk about something other than Israel-Palestine issues for the moment. Daily Cost is knocking wildly on my door since yesterday. Wants me to, tell Congress to put an expiration date on unconstitutional bulk surveillance. I don't need to tell that they're writing, Daily Cost is writing to its members on its list. I don't need to tell you that the government's mass surveillance of its citizens has gone too far. But with key provisions of the USA Patriot Act set to expire on June 1 of this year, we have a chance to take back some of our privacy. Among the provisions set to expire is one that the NSA claims to, among the provisions set to expire on June 1st is one that the National Security Agency, the NSA, claims allows it to protect, to collect private data about all of our phone calls. This is our best chance to take back some of our civil liberties. Sign the petition now. Go to Daily Costs, Daily Costs, KOS. Google Daily Costs and look for that petition about the Patriot Act's impending loss of some of its key parts on the 1st of June, if you want to sign that petition. Okay, this is far... They make a big deal about me wanting to read this. I assume they were going to have a long list of things that they're going to let go, but alas, that is not the situation. Okay. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, once again... From the Michigan office of ADC, ADC Michigan takes the lead on the assault in the East Dearborn Kroger. Let's see what that's about. February 13. On the late evening of Thursday, February 12, Thursday, February 12, ADC Michigan fielded telephone calls from witnesses who indicated that an Arab American male in a Dearborn-based Kroger, I don't know what the word Kroger means, I thought maybe it was a neighborhood, ADC Michigan fielded telephone calls from witnesses who indicated that an Arab American male at a Dearborn-based Kroger, that gets that the department or grocery store, a Dearborn-based Kroger store, may have been the victim of racial bias. The ADC Michigan immediately contacted Dearborn Chief of Police Ronald Haddad, that's an Arabic name, to notify him of the complaint to ensure a thorough investigation occurred. This morning, ADC Michigan staff visited the Kroger store where the incident occurred and confirmed that an assault involving an Arab American male did occur. Thereafter, ADC Michigan had a follow-up meeting with Chief Haddad in which they expressed their concerns about the assault being motivated by racial bigotry. Chief Haddad assured ADC Michigan that the matter was being investigated thoroughly. The ADC Michigan also reached out to the FBI, who is monitoring the case closely. The ADC Michigan anticipates the wrapping up of the investigation by the Dearborn Police Department to be as early as next week. ADC Michigan Director Attorney Fatina Abdrabo said, in light of what has happened with the murders at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and today's burning of a mosque in Houston, it is expected that our community remains on heightened alert. We trust and expect that law enforcement will investigate this thoroughly and bring appropriate charges, end quote. ADC has released a community advisory encouraging citizens to remain vigilant and to call 911 should they ever feel threatened at home or in any public setting. If you or anyone you know has been the victim of any bigotry, hate, bias, or discrimination, call our office immediately at this phone number, area code 313. Area code 313-581-1201. That would be in Michigan, Detroit, urban vicinity. Or email us at ADCMitch, ADCMICH, at ADC.org. As the ADC Michigan remains committed to strengthening the voice of Arab Americans through advocacy and the three E's, education, engagement, and empowerment. It's 4:23 in the afternoon. Let's take a look at this week's disinformation newsletter. Well, let's start with this. And I click on the link, and it gives me not what I was looking for. Oh, that's just a local problem at this particular programming machine here. 9 reasons not to join the United States military. 9 reasons not to join the U.S. military. This is, again, offered by a Disinformation Weekly. Written by Good German on February 7 in Op-Ed. Reason number 1, not to join the military. 1, the military is a cult that brainwashes you. The military is painstakingly designed around the cult model, and the two biggest... All right. And the two biggest red flags that the military is a cult are its unethical indoctrination process and totalitarian pyramid-shaped caste system. Other warning signs are the use of an inside language, in-group symbols, rituals, in-group socializing, constantly telling you that the military is your family, convincing you that military history is your history, and other tactics that convince you to base your identity and purpose in life primarily on the military. Individually, these practices aren't necessarily sinister, but the military goes to extreme lengths to use every trick in the book every day to convince its members to base their identity on the in-group and to devote their life to it. That's what cults do. And the military does it better than anyone. I'm not going to say this. I'm not saying this to attack the troops. I'm not saying you suck because you're a brainwashed slave in a cult. I'm saying this, and when I say I, of course, I'm referring to Good German, the author of this article. I'm saying this to raise objection to the mistreatment of the troops. If you support the troops, then you shouldn't get angry at me for pointing out that the military misleads, manipulates, and mistreats the troops. If you support the troops, then you should support UCMJ reform. Whatever that is. Reason number two. Reason... It says nine reasons not to join the military, and then there is no number two. It skips right from one to five to eight. So read the rest here. All right. Well, we don't have a lot of time, so let's just deal with these featured reasons. But that was number one. Reason number five. You'll fight and possibly die to defend the very ideals you swore to fight against. There's no country in the world that wants to take away America's freedoms. The only people in the world who want to take away America's freedoms are the very politicians who every active duty soldier swears an oath of allegiance to, and they've been very successful at it, especially since September 11th, 2001. America is no longer the land of the free, and it's also no longer a representative democracy. America is a corporatocracy controlled by the rich for the rich. America doesn't even defend democracy abroad. America is the only country actively toppling democracies. Look that up. It's not a conspiracy, it's common knowledge. If you join the United States military, you won't fight for truth, justice, or freedom. You'll fight for a government that crushes public dissent, locks up more people than any other country in the world. That's a statistical fact. Locks up more people than any other country in the world in a for-profit prison system that uses inmates as slave labor. You won't fight for peace. You'll fight for a country that commits human rights violations, spies on its own citizens, and locks up whistleblowers while protecting war criminals. You'll fight for a country that destabilizes weaker countries to allow multinational businesses to fleece them out of their national resources and outsource jobs in their sweatshops. Outsource jobs to their sweatshops. The American military might fight against terrorism, but it also engages in terrorism and creates more terrorists every time it kills innocent civilians, which is literally every day. Oh, God. Which is literally every day. There are no serious foreign threats to America's way of life. Catch the key word in that sentence. There are no serious foreign threats to America's way of life. Possibly the biggest threat to the average American's quality of life is America's own industrial war complex, which directs trillions of tax dollars every year to killing goat herders with, while America's schools crumble from lack of funding. Trillions of tax dollars each year. If you support America's military mission, you won't make the world a better place. In the end, your noble sacrifices will make the world a worse place, but don't take my word for it. If you want to know what America's military stands for, ask the good people of Diego Garcia. And this will close out the reading. Perhaps because we have no choice of this article, of this very abridged article, apparently abridged. Item number eight of the nine reasons why you shouldn't join the military. Number eight, military culture is devolving into a maniacally politically correct, anal retentive, snowflake office hell. I'll explain what life is like in the Air Force, and you can just subtract a few degrees for each of the other branches. Cussing at all is frowned up, and in a lot of offices it's banned. I think he meant cussing at all is frowned on, and in a lot of offices it's banned, or maybe frowned up is an expression I'm just not familiar with. The only kind of music you can listen to at work are pop and Christian. You can't make crude jokes. You can be court-martialed for sexual harassment for saying the word vagina. This is this guy's experience in the Air Force, apparently. Or what he was privy to. There was a public service announcement commercial that ran on the Armed Forces television network at my first duty station. There you go, his first duty station, that said, you don't have to do anything to be guilty of sexual harassment. Literally. It literally said that. You can't smoke anywhere but at isolated, designated smoking areas, and you can't smoke at all on some bases. You can't put your hands in your pockets. You can't walk and talk on your cell phone. You can't walk in the grass. As a general rule of thumb, you'll get yelled at for wearing any article of civilian clothing on base that you wouldn't wear to church. You generally have to act like Ned Flanders, or you'll get yelled at for being unprofessional. There is some validity to these rules, but when you add all of them up, but when you add all of them and the many others not mentioned together and continue to make more and more rules that force you to act like a neutered youth pastor, you create an environment that's less like the adventure advertised on recruiting commercials and more like embodiment of everything the movie Office Space was satirizing. People who can't conform to that standard ended leaving the military willingly or unwillingly. Those who act the most whitewashed and sanitized rise to the top. So that's who you work for. That's who you work with. That's the environment you eat, sleep, and breathe in. If that kind of life appeals to you, and you don't mind being complicit in the deaths of thousands of civilians every year, then join the Air Force. Okay. I think that was worth relating to you. Let's look at this. The 1969 science fiction novel, which eerily predicted today. 1969 novel. By Jacob Sloan, April 13, 2013. Well, here we have an information, disinformation weekly that I receive weekly. And I guess this must be a really good article because it's almost 2 years old. The 1969 science fiction novel, which eerily predicted today. Again, by Jacob Sloan. John Bruner's Stand on Zanzibar, written more than 40 years ago, but set in an imagined year 2010, in which ever more power is concentrated in the hands of a few global corporations, is eerily accurate about so much current reality. Via the millions, Ted Gioia writes the following. Via the millions, Ted Gioia writes, Bruner's vision of the year 2010 even includes a popular leader named President Obama. Let's have a little music here. I got to get the door. Okay, just taking care of some business there. Let me recalibrate the volume on this and go back to the reading. Eyeglasses. Gruner's vision of the year 2010 even includes a popular leader named President Obomi. O-B-O-M-I. Let me list some of the other correct predictions in Bruner's book. Random acts of violence by crazy individuals, often taking place in schools, plague society in Stand on Zanzibar. The other major source of instability and violence comes from terrorists, who are now a major threat to U.S. interests, and even manage to attack buildings within the United States. Prices have increased sixfold between 1960 and 2010 because of inflation. And then he writes parenthetically here, the actual increase in U.S. prices during that period was sevenfold, but Bruner was close at sixfold. The most powerful U.S. rival is no longer the Soviet Union, but China. However, much of the competition between the U.S. and Asia is played out in economics, trade, and technology instead of overt warfare. Europeans have formed a Union of Nations to improve their economic prospects and influence on world affairs and international issues. Britain tends to side with the U.S., but other countries in Europe are often critical of U.S. initiatives. Again, folks, I am reading from this article, the 1969 science fiction novel, which eerily predicted today. He refers to John Bruner's Stand on Zanzibar. I don't understand. Oh, okay. Written more than 40 years ago. The details of that novel. Continuing, Africa still trails far behind the rest of the world in economic development, and Israel remains the epicenter of tensions in the Middle East. Although some people still get married, many in the younger generation now prefer short-term hookups without long-term commitment. Gay and bisexual lifestyles have gone mainstream, and pharmaceuticals to improve sexual performance are widely used and even advertised in the media. This brings to mind another science fiction novel by Anthony Burgess, which I believe came out roughly around 1969, called The Wanting Seed. No, I never read it, but I am aware that in The Wanting Seed, in order to keep the population growth down, society actually advocated gay and bisexual lives, or advocated gay lifestyles. Anyway, continuing with this about Stand on Zanzibar. Many decades of affirmative action have brought blacks into positions of power, but racial tensions still simmer throughout society. Motor vehicles increasingly run on electric fuel cells. Honda, primarily known as a motorcycle manufacturer when Bruner wrote his book, is a major supplier of electric fuel cells, along with General Motors. Yet Detroit has not prospered and is almost a ghost town because of all the shuttered factories. However, a new kind of music with an uncanny resemblance to the actual Detroit techno movement of the 1990s has sprung up in the city. TV news channels have now gone global via satellite. TiVo-type systems allow people to view TV programs according to their own schedule. In-flight entertainment systems on planes now include video programs and news accessible on individual screens at each seat. Yeah, I've certainly come across that more than once. In-flight entertainment systems on planes now include video programs and news accessible on individual screens at each seat. People may rely on avatars to represent themselves on video screens. Bruner calls these images, which either can look like you or take on another appearance you select, Mr. and Mrs. Everywhere. Computer documents are generated with laser printers. And he, at the apparent end of this article, which comes to us by way of Disinformation Weekly, a social and political backlash has marginalized tobacco, but marijuana has been decriminalized. Fascinating stuff. Google Disinformation, or Disinformation Weekly, if you want to subscribe to this yourself. He's got a picture of the cover of the book here. Hugo Award winner by John Bruno. Stand on Zanzibar. An article about this over 40-year-old book. Okay, well, I would love to read the internet comments on this item, but given the fact that we've got only some 13 minutes of program left, I'd better scoot on to another item. In fact, get off of this Disinfo Weekly thing for now. You're listening to the closing minutes of Mideast Migraines on Free Radio Santa Cruz for Monday, February 16. Let's squeeze this sucker in here. There is an important major American English language publication centered on Jewish and to some degree Israeli issues. It's called The Forward, or the Jewish Forward. I think they might have dropped the word Jewish, at least as in the as it displays on its website here. Okay, here we go. This Who Speaks for the Jews? An editorial published in the Forward Mobile specifically, that form of it, published on Wednesday, February 11. Who Speaks for the Jews? Who Speaks for the Jews? Who Speaks for the Jews? Knowing how diverse and sometimes fractious Jews can be, you'd think that would be a complicated question to answer. But Joe Scarborough, the conservative morning talk show host on MSNBC, seems to know with a certainty that eludes many Jews themselves. His answer? Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Or Benjamin Netanyahu. He's, quote, basically a spokesman for Jews worldwide that are getting slaughtered on the streets of Paris, that are facing unprecedented anti-Semitic attacks in recent memory, end quote. Scarborough said in a long emotional monologue, February 9. And, quote, the people of Israel and Jews across the globe need to know there is at least one country that understands what they are going through, the anti-Semitism they face every day, end quote. Well, Joe, they are actually us. We are the Jews that you claim are represented by Netanyahu. Perhaps we shouldn't blame you for making the connection. After all, the Prime Minister himself has repeated that claim in his defense for circumventing the White House to address a joint meeting of Congress in March at the invitation of the Republican Speaker of the House. I went to Paris not just as the Prime Minister of Israel, but as a representative of the entire Jewish people, Netanyahu said during a conference for French-speaking Likud activists February 8. Just as I went to Paris, so I will go any place I'm invited to convey the Israeli position against those who want to kill us. Those who want to kill us are, first and foremost, any Iranian regime that says outright it plans to destroy us. Let's pause for a moment. Put aside the unforgivable harm that's in... Whoops, you caught me, folks. Let's pause for a moment. Put aside the unforgivable harm this invitation has done to the crucial American-Israel diplomatic relationship and examine the deeper issue here. Who does, indeed, speak for the Jews? Can anyone? There are, by reputable accounts, about 14 million of us worldwide. In the past few years, Israel has become home to a plurality of that population, with more than 6 million Jews there now. The only population that comes close is the 5.3 million here in the United States, according to the Pew Research Center's 2013 survey. And the numbers are not increasing anywhere near the level of growth in Israel, which has the highest birth rate in the developed world. According to the Pew Research Center's 2013 survey, 2 years old. So, in a narrow sense, the Prime Minister of Israel does indeed speak for the largest concentration of Jews. There is a snarky Twitter meme insinuating that because only 23% of Israel's Jews voted directly for Likud, which is Netanyahu's party, and close to 70% of American Jews voted for President Obama, the president received more votes than the prime minister and is therefore, quote, the better spokesman for the Jewish people, President Obama. That's ridiculous. Israel's parliamentary system doesn't rely strictly on the popular vote, and whatever you think of Netanyahu's policies, he legitimately assembled a ruling coalition in 2009 and again in 2013, not to forget his first election as premier in 1996. Whether he'll retain office after March's vote is, according to the latest polls, a toss-up. But for now, it's all his. And yet, there's no denying that Netanyahu has expanded that position to encompass a far greater constituency abroad, and not just on what he considers the, quote, existential issue of Iran's nuclear capabilities. By rushing to Paris to march, lecture, and promote immigration to Israel after the terrorist attacks in January, he rankled many of the Jews he ostensibly was there to help, turning what should have essentially been a Shiva call to comfort the grieving into an uncomfortable political exercise. And by claiming to represent all Jews in his plea to a GOP Congress, a Republican Congress, to defy a Democratic president, Netanyahu risks the, quote, Israelization, or even the, quote, Judaization of the debate over Iran's nuclear weapons. This is a potentially risky move. Israel's best hope to stop Iran is to persuade America and her allies to stop Iran because it is in their interests, not just in Israel's interests, and certainly not just in the interests of global Jewry. As perpetual minority actors on the world stage, we Jews must be able to do whatever it takes to protect ourselves, yes. But we also have survived because we have learned how to align our interests with those who protect and appreciate us, and let us hope, with forces of good. We have survived into modern times because we haven't relied on one leader, a king or a prelate or pope, and instead embrace the fact that we are diverse in more ways than we can count. Why even Israel's hierarchical rabbinate has two chiefs, one for the Ashkenazim and one for the Sephardim. Israel's hierarchical rabbinate. It's hard to imagine American Jews settling on anyone to represent them, except perhaps for John Stewart, at least until the end of the year. It's not simply that we are a fractious bunch whom even Moses had trouble controlling. At least since our greatest dispersion 2 millennia ago, we've learned to find vitality and sustenance in a dynamic pluralism that resists centralization. Scarborough said at the end of his recent TV rant that unless you accept the anti-Semitism displayed in France as a pervasive reality, and I quote, you don't understand what Jews are going through. Well, he doesn't understand what Jews are going through, though. Not all our lives are consumed with terror and hate. Not all our lives revolve around Israel. Editors at the Forward have been penning editorials for more than a century, but we wouldn't presume to speak for all Jews. Neither should anyone else. End of op-ed. Join me next Monday at 3 p.m. And hopefully I'll have that AIPAC, former AIPAC member who became enlightened, available for you in one piece with no crosstalk. Also join me for the re-beginning of Anna Balzer's book, 2007 book, Witness in Palestine, An American Jew in the Occupied Territories, Saturday at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening. Ta-ta.
Ali. entre otras cosas, es el diseño, la puesta en funcionamiento de una unidad fiscal especializada.
Concluye un comité de la ONU que las desapariciones son generalizadas en México y muchas de ellas podrían calificarse de forzadas.
A service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org for Monday, February 16th, 2015. Israeli troops invade a number of West Bank communities and kidnap civilians. Meanwhile, Israeli police target Palestinian workers. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli soldiers invaded on Monday at dawn several communities in the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem and kidnapped seven Palestinians, in addition to a Palestinian who was kidnapped on Sunday at night. In occupied Jerusalem, undercover soldiers invaded four homes in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood and at Turn Town and kidnapped four Palestinians, including two children. In other news, Israeli police officers conducted a massive search campaign in the Galilee in order to kidnap and detain Palestinian workers and arrested 16. News sources said that the police said that the kidnapped Palestinians entered Israel and worked there without permits. They have all been interrogated for hours before some of them were released.